WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, John Lovitz, is about to do a live TV show, but it's not Saturday Night Live, where he got his start. He'll host and star in a one-hour comic play live from the Aquarius Theater in Los Angeles. You can see it May 17th on Fox right after Married with Children. Lovitz was a cast member of Saturday Night Live from 1984 to 1990. He became best known for the characters he created, like Tommy Flanagan, the pathological liar, the pretentious actor known as Master Thespian, Annoying Man, and a caricature of gay writer and actor Harvey Fierstein. Lovitz is happy to get another shot at live TV.
Well, I'm excited about it. I did Saturday Night Live for 5 years, and, you know, there's nothing more exciting than live television. I mean, unless you've done it, you don't know, but it's tremendously thrilling. And I didn't want to do a regular sitcom. I'd done one before, and it was, you know, I enjoyed doing it, but after doing Saturday Night Live, to go back to that format for me was, frankly, too boring. Also, because when you're doing a sitcom, you tape for 2 hours, and a lot of times you're redoing scenes, and you're asking the audience to laugh again, and you have a warm-up person that talks incessantly between every scene, and then even after that, you have another 3 hours or more of doing pickup shots after the audience has left. And I didn't want to do that. Also, another reason we're live is so that we can focus on the acting and the writing, as opposed to, say, special effects or a lot of camera cuts.
In the years that you were live on Saturday Night Live, were there times when being live turned into a nightmare, when something went terribly wrong and it was kind of embarrassing?
No, nothing like that. I mean, nothing ever went terribly wrong. I mean, there was a couple of times when I just wanted to bolt off stage.
Would you name one?
Well, I don't know. One time I was doing something on Update and it wasn't going that well, and I just wanted to run away. But you couldn't, because the camera's just, all of a sudden you just become really aware. It's like a silent eye just staring at you and knowing that everyone's looking at you. The one time it really hit me was my first show, when the first thing I ever did on the show, it was a panel discussion. So when the camera came to me, I just remember thinking, God, the whole country's looking at me right now, we're live. And then I thought, oh no, it's 3 hours later in California. So, all right, that's like 10 million less.
That was reassuring.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Lovitz, and he has a special that will be on Fox TV on May 17th. I'd like to ask you about some of the characters that you created for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay.
Why don't we start with Tommy Flanagan, the pathological liar, which is the character that you first really became famous for from the show. How did you create him?
Well, I got it from old movies when, you know, in the 40s, and I'd say, yeah, that's the ticket. And yeah, I mean, I didn't make up that phrase. And then it really started as an inside joke between a friend of mine and I, and a girl, and I was always trying to pick up on her, and she said she liked the guy with the fat wallet. So I'd say, well, you know, my dad just had 15 oil wells come in. And she'd say, yeah, right. And I'd say, well, I am a pathological liar. And then I was in the Growlings Theater, and I decided to write it up as a monologue, as a like a person at Alcoholics Anonymous, when they get up and say, you know, I'm an alcoholic and here's my story. And not that's funny, but I thought it would be funny if it was a guy like Pathological Liars Anonymous, and then a guy would get up and start telling how he lied and then just start lying about that. And the first time I did it, you know, I did it and people laughed, and then this engineer that worked at NBC came up to Lauren's office and said, oh, that's the funniest thing I ever saw, you should put that on more. And so it's because of the audience response, really, that you repeat characters. You know, it's not the other way around. It's the audience picks the hit characters, and then, you know, so you continue to do them.
But at a certain point, you gave up the character. What was that point?
Well, I'd done it so many times, and I just wanted to move on.
Mm-hmm.
After the second year, it was just kind of enough.
So you decided to stop it.
Yeah, people are, you know, on Saturday Night, they're kind of weird about that when you have a hit character, they
want you to milk it.
Well, no, they want you to do it, and when it becomes popular, then everyone tends to, you know, because they're comedians, they tend to make fun of it and not really, you know, go, yeah, that. And it's an odd, it's a weird thing when you have a hit character. They don't really. They're not saying, hey, that's great. They're kind of saying, like, making fun of it because the show, I guess, is supposed to be like anti-culture, you know, or whatever, you know, against the establishment. So when you have a hit character and it becomes part of that, then they end up, you know, making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then after, you know, it bothered me at first, and then after a while I go, okay, I get it, you know. But I kind of got tired of doing it, and then it made me feel good when I did Annoying Man my last year, and it was, I just slapped it together and, like, you know, I just said, give me the costume, and I wrote it in like 30 seconds.
Do you want to describe the character?
Just someone who's, I just try to be somebody who's annoying in every possible way, and a very grating voice, and, you know, like, hello, how are you? You know, and if you listen to someone talk like that for a long time, it would start getting annoying. And then I would chew on tin foil and take a fork and, you know, scrape it against a pan and, you know, really grating a chalkboard, you know, it was really grating. And it was just very silly. And in my opinion, it was very stupid. It was just being very silly. And it was taking a character like that, and then, which was completely non-cerebral, just, you know, ridiculously silly and dumb. And then, it became popular, and it felt... it felt good to me because a lot of the writers are from Harvard and they're like, oh, you know, they're trying to write really sophisticated, clever stuff that doesn't work a lot of times. And then you just come along with something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know,
So let me ask you about Master Thespian, your most pretentious actor. What was the story behind the creation of that character?
Oh, well, I went to a college at UC Irvine, and there was a professor of mine, William Needles, who taught me Shakespeare. And when he would do it, though, himself, he'd always go, he'd say, like, the opening speech from Henry V, the chorus, and was, oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention. And he would say, like, oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention. Like that. And I thought it was very funny. I thought it was very good, but very funny, too. And I used to imitate him. And then I kind of put it together with... You know, and then I wanted to be an actor, and an actor is a, you know, that's what a thespian is. So I was like the master thespian. You know, I was just joking around with my friend and say, I'm the master thespian, because I just wanted to be a great actor. That was my goal.
John Lovitz is my guest. So how did you come up with the Harvey Fierstein character for the I Just Want to Be Loved, Is That So Wrong?
Oh, well, I'd seen him in a play before. You know, he has a very distinctive style and voice. And then I... was watching some show. He did Tidy Endings, and then I was reading in the paper about him. He had this movie Torch Song Trilogy coming out, so I was reading about him, and I just found I could imitate him really easily, and so I just came up with it. And in the I Just Want to Be Loved, Is That So Wrong? In this article, it said he'd been celibate for a year and a half, you know, and he, you know, he just the whole, you know, he's gay, and that's pretty much what his, I guess, work is about in his life. So he said he's been celibate for a year and a half, and he said, I just want a man to wrap his arms around me and hold me. Is that so wrong? So I just made it, and I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong? And, you know, I just painted a picture of somebody who was looking for somebody. And anyway, I did it, and he didn't like it. And I finally did the third time I did it with Kathleen Turner was on the show, and I wrote a thing where, you know, she tries to pick up on me and kisses me and I faint. I go, it never happened. And then the next guest is Lee Iacocca, and I end up with him. I mean, the sketch is pretty silly, but he didn't like it, and it was in the papers. He's complained about it in Arsenio Hall. And he came to the show and said why he didn't like it and felt I was doing a stereotype of gay people. And then, he was nice about it, and I didn't, you know.
It must be hard when you're doing somebody who's based on an actual person as opposed to a type. You know, like Master Thespian is a type of
Yeah, well,
person.
Everyone said, oh, you should have changed the name. You know, like they did Hans and Franz, and it's really, they're imitating Arnold Schwarzenegger, but they just make it, you know, they changed it and mm-hmm. said, we'll make it his cousins, and who idolize him, which adds to the sketch. I don't know. I didn't really ever think it would be a problem. And there was people on the show who were gay. I said, is this offending you? And they all said no, And one guy said, no, it isn't, but if it was, you know, I would tell you. And, you know, this is a makeup man who had, you know, been in the show by then, like, 4 or 5 years, I knew.
Yeah. One of my favorite sketches of the ones that you've done on Saturday Night Live was Harry Hanukkah.
Oh.
Did you write that?
No, Al Franken and Mike Myers wrote it.
Oh.
And, but I based it on, they wrote it, and it was really funny, and then I based it on this actor, Ned Glass, Ned Glassy talks like this, and he was the father on Bridget and Bernie. He was the Jewish father. He was in he's probably the best West Side Story. He was Pops, I guess, who runs the drugstore, the candy store.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 15 years old...
What's wrong with you kids?
Well, when I was... You know, if you see these movies, you know who he is. When I was 15 years old, I was at my best friend's house, and his father is a doctor, and Ned Glass was one of his patients. And I was 15, and my friend's father says to Ned Glass, John wants to be an actor. And he says, you want to be an actor? He goes, what would you do if you hurt your toe? And I said, I'd say, ouch. He goes, would you say ouch if you were Hercules? And he goes, you know what you have to do? He goes, you know what you have to know to be an actor? You have to know everything. You think you could know everything? You have to know everything. You know, so as if he knew everything. And then he goes, you know, there was only... He was the same in everything he played. And he was, you know, he was a good actor and he was funny, but he was always... He was just himself. He was exactly the same. And he says, you know... There was only two actors who were never typecast, me and Paul Muni. And so, anyways, I never forgot him, so I... That's why. And he was good. He was a funny actor, you know. He's funny, but, you know, he never... I guess he always thought he played all these different characters, and really he was just always, hello, how are you? I mean, in Julius Caesar, in the movie with Marlon Brando, he's in the opening market scene, and everyone's going, my lord, come here and hither. And he's in the market saying, you want to buy some oranges, my lord? You know.
My guest is John Lovitz. He's a former cast member of Saturday Night Live. He'll host and star in a live comic theater special on Fox TV May 17th. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. John Lovitz is my guest. Were there any jokers in your family? Did you have a father who'd sit around the dinner table and tell jokes?
Yeah, he used to goof off, and he used to make prank phone calls, and, I mean, the look for annoying man I got from him, he used to comb his hair forward and wear his glasses low. He didn't act like that, but that's where I got the look from, and he used to do something. He used to come home and tell us he was his twin brother, Howard. We would be like 7 or 8, but he would play it so straight for like a half an hour and just insist on it, and then he would leave. And then, like, 20 minutes later, come back. I guess he would just wait in his car. And then we'd say, Howard was here. He goes, he was? You know.
So he really had a twin brother, Howard?
Huh? No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't?
No, he just said he did.
I see. Okay.
We were young. He would do stuff like that.
Did you ever do stand-up? Thrilling.
Well, yeah, like, I would imitate their albums, you know. And then I went to the comedy store after college once. And they said, well, you know, you have good presence, but, you know, work on it and come back in 3 months. And then I would go to the, at the improv at the time, Robin Williams was on Mark and Mindy, and it was, I mean, at the Comedy Store, and they would have this improv potluck night where on Mondays anybody could, you could just show up and get up on stage and improvise. So I went, I started going on Mondays, and I went like twice, and then the third Monday I went, I was, in line, and I got to the front of the line, and the guy said, who's letting people in, said, oh, we're asking certain people not to come back, and you're one of them.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I was, like, pretty crushed. And I wasn't crying, but I was like, you know, like, God, you know, it was pretty devastating, so I just said, well, and say, forget this place. So, and then, but the point is that if I'd been a real stand-up, you know, a real stand-up part, then I would have just said, you know, well, this guy's an idiot. What does he know?
Mm-hmm.
And kept going. But that was more improv. And then I still tried it. And I went to at the Comedy Store, they had this comedian teaching this workshop on Saturdays that was for free. And you could just go. And so he'd go and he was, you know, helping. But he'd say, you know, I went once and he said, well, he goes, they're not hiring stand-ups for comedy. He goes, you think they would, but they go, well, they're stand-ups and they're not actors. Which I guess was true partially. So I just thought, well, I'll just skip that step and just be an actor. You know, I thought it would be a way in. And so I never really did it. And since I got started live, I've gotten up on stage, like a Catch Rising Star in the Improv in L.A. about 10 times. But the Comedy Store at the time was a very strange place. It was everybody was very bitter because Hair Robin Williams came and he made it and was famous. And you got the feeling everyone felt they should be, you know, Robin Williams too. So, like, you'd have the doormen who were comedians working the door, but they were just very bitter and angry. And it was just a very, I didn't like it, you know. It was a very mm-hmm. weird place.
Mm-hmm. When you left Saturday Night Live in 1990, what were your reasons for leaving then?
Well, the real reason is my contract was up and I had a good year. And then I had a chance to do this. All of a sudden, I had gotten three movies in a row, Mr. Destiny and A League of Their Own and Mom and Dad Save the World. And so I was going to be able to, I did Mr. Destiny in April, and then I was going to do those two movies in the summer. And A League of Their Own fell through, and then Mom and Dad Save the World, their schedule changed. And so I would have had to miss two shows in the beginning of the season. And Lorne Michaels said, well, you can't, no, you know, he has a policy, you can't miss shows. And so I had to make a choice between if I was going to do this movie or go back to the show. And I felt that it was a great part, and financially it was paying me the same amount of money. So I felt, well, if I leave the show, I'll be secure financially. And I felt, well, I could do the show another year, and they wanted me to do two more years, which is, you know, like saying, hey, we'll hire you for two more years, which is nice. But I felt that, well, I'd gotten as much out of the show as I could, and after, you know, 2 years, the movies might not be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do, and I really had to make a choice. And this is a pretty funny story. I'd been sent a script early in the year, and I'd read it, and they said, well, they really want to meet with you on this movie. And I said, oh, I don't know. And I read it, and I thought, well, this is pretty funny. But the part was more of a, it was just like a smaller part where all I do is react to the situation. And I the lead was this kid, and I said, well, this is the kid's movie. And I go, oh, I don't want to play second fiddle to some kid. And they go, well, they really want to meet with you. And I said, well, I don't know. The movie's funny, and I think it's good, but the part doesn't interest me. Anyway, so the movie was Home Alone.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah. So then I thought, oops. So when this movie came on, I read it, and I go, well, you know, I don't want to make the same mistake again. But really, you couldn't make the same mistake again. Nobody knows.
Is it difficult to convince casting directors that you can do parts outside of the types of characters you created on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, it's difficult. One time, I had met Dustin Hoffman before, and he said, you're in my next picture, you know. And I'd met him once. We had the same agency, and then... And then a man about 8 months later, he goes, oh, I didn't know who you were when I met you, and I've seen you, you're very funny, you're in my next movie. And then I ran into him again about a year later in the street, and I said, he goes, hey, how are you? I go, good. I go, well, you know, you said I was in your next movie, and then Rain Man came out, and I said, Tom Cruise, what happened to me? You know, so he laughed, and he goes, well, I met then, I'm bringing you in on my next movie, which was Billy Bathgate, and he did bring me in. He was really nice, and he brought me in to meet Robert Benton, and he just said, well, I just think John, you know. Oh, well, what happened was there was on the table, there was the paper, you know, there was two copies of Billy Bathgate, the hardcover and the paperback. So I go in, and I said, Robert Benton, so which movie are you doing, the hardcover or the paperback? You know, and they laughed. And then he said, well, this is a serious movie. And then Dustin Hoffman goes, yeah, now's not the time to be funny. And I went, oh. So anyway, we talked, and you know, I was thrilled that he brought me in. And then he's saying, well, you know, where can I just think John's great, and he does the characters. Where can we fit him in the movie? What do you think of this part? And Robert Benton said, oh, I know, he can do anything, I'm sure, but I just think the audience will start laughing once they see him on the screen. And I said, well, yeah, they might laugh at first, but then... you know, after a few minutes, then it'll be fine, you know. So it wasn't a question of whether I could had the ability, in Rob Benton's mind, whether I had the ability or to do it or not, but whether, like, you know, they'll see me and start laughing. But I don't know. So I didn't get in the movie, but that's all right. And so I don't know. I'll get the opportunity. You know, I don't know. I don't really view it as my problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I if people want to limit, you know, you're on Saturday Night Live and you play, you know, a million, you know, what, five different characters almost every week, you know, for 91 shows, and it's, you know, and then people say, well, can you play this? And you're going, well, I guess I can do these 500, but this is, you know, no, this one style, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Everyone on that show, not only myself, but Jan Hooks, Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman. you know, they're all tremendously versatile and really can, you know, play any style and any, you know, can do it.
So one last question. Do you still watch Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, sure.
Do you ever wish you were still on it, or are you sure you made the right choice?
Well, yeah, after I left, I honestly wondered for a long time if I made the right choice or not. But I definitely think I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like, you know, and at the time my thinking was the same, was I had a good year. I left going out on top. And I knew that they were going to hire a lot of new people. And they say, no, if you hadn't left, we wouldn't have. But they were hiring. When I was even there, they were going to hire two more people and more and more. So that's not true. They were going to hire a lot of new people. And a lot of, you know, there's 18 people on the show now. And a lot of, I mean, the own cast that's on the show now, they say it in, there's some article in Us Magazine. It's very frustrating, you know. You do a show. Like Victoria Jackson, she appeared on a show, and then she missed four shows, you know,
mm-hmm.
wasn't on it at all. And I didn't want to, I felt that, for me, that would just be sliding backwards. I didn't want to, you know, go backwards. And so I figured, well, I'd rather be one of three people in a movie than one of, you know, 20. You know, with the host, it's 19. With me there, it'd have been 20, you know, 20.
Right. Do you feel that there aren't that many good movie comedy scripts out there, and that TV might be a kind of better place for a while, you know, with your TV special coming up, where you'd have more input in it?
Well, for me personally, yes. I mean, I am not in the position to just say, all right, I want to make this movie, let's make it. I mean, yeah, there aren't that, for me, for my taste, no, there aren't that many funny scripts out there. I mean, but ask any actor, there aren't that many great scripts, period. You know, and every actor's always saying that, and it's true. And, but I like to write stuff and write my own comedy. And so really on this style of comedy and you really can only do on television, where you come up with an idea and you work on it and then you can present it, you know, that week. And, you know, movies, it takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you're in a film, unless you're the director or you have final cut, you know, you don't have any say over your performance. And so for me, yeah, I think TV is a great place.
Well, John Lovitz, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
John Lovitz hosts and stars in a live comedy special Sunday, March 17th, right after Married with Children on Fox. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.